I'm sure the reason that the schedule got messed up is really my fault. I mean, you've got a very gracious pastor in Josh, and it's just that when we came down to it, somehow the communications didn't all happen, and so I feel kind of out of whack, because I've gotten into the rhythm of this is what August looks like. You know, I spend all of August here, and basically, for those of you who don't know what I do with this, I mean, I usually pick up a topic and run with it all year myself, my own personal study, and then you guys are the guinea pigs. Because then I take all that and say, okay, can I say it? Can I articulate it to somebody else? And so I bring it all into August here and say, okay, here's what I've been getting, guys, and I put it out on you. So some other time we'll do this. This morning coming here was way different for me. I mean, for one thing, Ruthie's not with me. I'm sorry for those of you who came mainly to hopefully see her. It's just that logistics of the day and some of the things that are going on, I have to go somewhere else, she has to go somewhere else. That was part of the course. But then as I left, first I usually stop and get coffee out in Santa Cruz as I'm leaving. Well, they were training new baristas today. So it was like, how long does it take to put together a latte? I wish I, you know, and so I'm watching the time go there, and I'm thinking, oh, wow. And then, you know, as I leave there, and I think, okay, now everything's good. And I get on the freeway, and there's semis on the freeway racing each other to pass. So that, you know, you get these big semis up there that are just, one's just barely edging past the other one, and then kind of losing it and kind of gaining again and then again losing it. And meanwhile, all the cars are piling up behind them, and I'm at the end of all of that. And I'm looking at this and saying, oh, this is not looking good. I mean, there was a series of these things. So I walked in here just before the service started this morning and felt a little bit kind of like I needed, you know, go off somewhere and kind of get myself put back together. But this whole idea of waiting and things that cause us to have to slow way down and disturb our idea of what the schedule should look like. About 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was, Ruthie and I were doing this really cool thing. We were traveling in Europe. And before we went, we heard about something. If you've traveled around, you know, Steve, Rick Steves, I mean, you're familiar with. Just describe it. Rich, he's a travel guy and stuff like that. And so we had done a lot of reading in his books and stuff to kind of sync up for it. And one of the things he strongly encouraged was that everyone, if you're going to travel and see things, you get what's called a museum pass. If you've ever traveled, this is a tip. Next time you go, you need to do this. Because this, you know, for whatever fee it was, with this museum pass, whenever you went to any of the museums, art galleries, churches, or anything like that you wanted to get into, and if you've probably you've seen this, there's these long lines, particularly during summer, long lines to kind of go out and around the block and way down there somewhere like that, and people are waiting to get in. Well, with a museum pass, you walk past all those people and you just simply hold up your cup all the way down and go right in ahead of them all. Now, for someone like me, this was like gold. I mean, it was worth going into all the museums just so I could walk past all the lines and go right up to the front and say, museum pass. Boom, right in there. I've thought about it a lot since then, wishing that somehow in life it was possible to get a museum pass. Just for life, you know? So whenever you're having to wait for things, you say, no, it's good. Museum pass. I don't have to wait. Because I found that life is filled with waiting, just like you've discovered. It's amazing how much time is consumed in just simply waiting. And as I've looked in the scriptures, it's filled with that. It's almost like God has a disregard for time and has no problem in having someone wait their entire life for a moment. And you go through all this and you're thinking, what's happening with that? Now, look in the scriptures, it's filled with people who had to wait. And often, most of us end up reading it, and we kind of blow through that. You know, that someone had to wait, you know, 7 years or something. Okay, fine, they waited 7 years. I reduced it down to more of a granular thing of days. And now it changes everything. For example, Jacob, in waiting for the love of his wife, Rachel, waited 2,700 days. Every day getting up and realizing I'm just one day closer. Sarah, childless, which in her culture was a huge thing. She waited over 27,000 days for a child. Meaning that each one of those days she had to wake up and realize again, I'm childless. Had to go into the world around her and have people looking at her and saying, what's wrong with you? Feeling the weight of that 27,000 days. Even many of those with a promise. Moses waited in the desert for over 15,000 days. Having been at the pinnacle, and one of the most powerful men in the entire world, was now a shepherd, wondering, has God forsaken me here? Will there ever be anything in my life? 15,000 days he woke up and had to go through that processing. Joseph waited in prison for over 1,000 days. David waited in the caves for God to fulfill his promises for over 5,000 days. The woman, the scriptures, the New Testament, the woman with the hemorrhage, had that for over 4,000 days. Mary Magdalene was tormented by demons for over 5,000 days. And that, when I started looking at this, I'm saying, the scriptures are loaded with this. We kind of step into these stories at a moment when something happens without seeing that all these days went before that, when people had to wait. Waiting is an inescapable part of life, as we all know in this room. I'm not sure what it is that you're waiting through today, but you are. Some of you are waiting through issues of health. Waiting through all the pain and the fear that comes with that. Whether it's yours or a loved one. Some of you are waiting through occupational uncertainty. Wondering what's out there. Is there anything for me out there? Some of you are waiting through financial distress. Some of you are waiting through difficult people that you're in the context of and you just have to be there. Some of you are single and you're waiting for somehow the right person to come along. Some of you are waiting for some kind of news, for something to change, but you're waiting. And it seems in the midst of that as though God has simply forgotten us. Now, don't you care? I mean, I'm wasting all this time, and it's an inescapable part of life. When I have talked with friends or people that I've had some kind of ministry connection with or family or whatever, in the midst of the waiting, the comment that is most used in this is, well, God is just simply teaching me patience. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, is there something more maybe in the midst of all this? Is God just simply saying, I want you just to learn to be still and wait? Yes, I think, but I think there's more to it. And with that in mind, I'd like us to actually look into a portion of Scripture that may give us some insight. I believe it does give us some insight into the art of waiting. It's in Colossians. Colossians chapter 1. It's a prayer that Paul prayed thousands of years ago, a couple thousand years. But I think it's a prayer that actually tumbles forward into this very room this morning, as though Paul was praying it for you and I. So listen to how he prays. This is Colossians chapter 1, starting in verse 9. It says, for this reason also, since the day we heard of it, we have not ceased to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all spiritual wisdom and understanding. So that you may walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. strengthened with all power according to his glorious might for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience, joyously giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. What I'd like us to focus on to begin with is verse 11. Notice how he prays for them in the midst of their waiting. Strengthened with all power according to his glorious might for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience. I believe that not only is waiting an inescapable part of life, I believe that waiting is also an essential part of the spiritual life. That waiting is never wasted on God. There's always something that is being developed inside it. I came across one person, I'm not even sure where I found this, but someone referred to this as God's gracious ministry of delaying and depriving. Well, there's almost a collision of words in that. God's gracious ministry of delaying and depriving. I found that as you look through the scriptures, it's a requirement for faith. Read it in Hebrews chapter 11 there. It's a requirement for that. It's also a classroom for character. And there are many places we can go on that. One of the places that I've been spending time in recently is in Romans 5, verses 3 and 4. It's a classroom. God uses this for greater purposes. But in this text here, I want us to notice some things that emerge out of this verse right here. He prays that they would be strengthened with all power according to God's glorious might. Now, if I was to simply, the translators have at least done in this particular translation a way of trying to separate these words out, but it almost can be said this, that you would be strengthened with strength according to his strength. And so it's kind of but it does divide out, because the first two terms are very similar. They're one's a verb, one's a noun. But this idea of strengthened, and the word that is used here on this first part, that you would be strengthened with power, same word, has to do with what could be described as potential power. The word that's used here is a word that means you've got the power here, but it's not necessarily accessed yet. In other words, it's available to you. It's kind of like a power outlet in my home. Okay, that they're all over the place. They're not all used. But it's there. It's available to me. So he's praying that you would have this potential power. Power that is available to you to use. But it's going to be up to you how to use it. Or to access it. And then he moves to the source of it. So that you would be strengthened with power according to God's glorious might. That's a different word. The word that's used of us is a word that has to do with potential power. But when he speaks of God's power, he's speaking of a power that is applied power. In other words, active and being used right now, continuously. It's God is the one who is actively applying his power all the time. So we connect to that. We have the ability, he's praying that we would have the ability to actually have this potential power that we recognize is tied to him, because everything ties to him. In the midst of waiting, part of the art of waiting is this idea of focusing on everything being sourced in God himself. The power sources in God, and everything we're going to see all tracks back to God. That's going to be where the key is, what separates us from everyone else. Those of us who have found redemption in Jesus, that we wait differently. So, he says that you would be strengthened with power, this potential, according to his glorious active power, his might. Then he says, for, in other words, here's where it's going to be applied, for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience. Now, I'm not sure what your translation has. It might be a bit different. If it's a lot different, we need to talk afterward. But it should sound something like that. For the attaining of all steadfastness and patience. Here again, it's a couple of words that are very similar. So it's almost like you could say for the attaining of all patience and patience. You know, it's just that kind of a thing. But they are different words here. And the difference is it's kind of fascinating. Because the first word that's used here, Philotimos, steadfastness, or whatever yours says on this, is a word that when it's used in the New Testament almost always has to do with circumstances of life. It's a word that literally, if you kind of took it apart, literally means to remain under. And it carries this idea of remaining under the weight of something. Now, if you've lived very long, which some of us have, you realize that an awful lot of life is this weight that comes on you. There's all that comes with life, and it's filled with all this stuff. It closes in from all these different sides. And this idea of waiting that's here, of steadfastness, the remaining under, is the idea of learning the art of living under the weight of circumstances of life. Now, some of you this morning come into this room and you've got the weight of the world on you. This word here is speaking to you. It's feeling that weight and still remaining under it. The art of remaining under the weight of circumstance. But Paul, as he articulates this prayer, includes a second word in there. Because waiting is not simply dealing with circumstances, the weight of those things. The word he uses alongside it, while steadfastness and patience, whatever your second word is, it's a word that's almost always used in connection with people. It's a word that literally means to be long-suffering. Do you feel like you're long-suffering this morning? I mean, so we've all got these people in our life, right? And we've all got people in our lives that it's, okay, got to be around them. And you walk through life knowing that maybe you're related to someone, you know, somehow, or you work alongside someone, their next door neighbor, the people that are just hard to be with. And so Paul, as he's praying, he brings in basically all of life in these two words. That we would be learning the art of being patient, of waiting in the midst of circumstances and in the midst of people, all put together on this thing here. That this would be part of what marks us, that we've learned this art of waiting. And not just a matter of waiting until, but of waiting, of being in the midst of this and being okay being there. In the midst of circumstances that are unresolved. And perhaps there's no idea when it will ever be resolved. In the midst of relationships of other people in whatever form that comes in, not until somehow they're gone, but just being there. There's an art to this. Some of you are thinking, so get on with it, Steve. What's the art? As you find in so much of the scriptures, it's the rest of the prayer that surrounds this. Because this is embedded in the middle of something here. And the rest of it gives us insight into how to wait, into the art of waiting. So let's back ourselves up and look at some of these things. He begins by praying that they would be filled with the knowledge of his will, with all spiritual wisdom and understanding. First insight is in the midst of waiting, part of the art comes from perspective. Realizing there's something bigger going on here. So he prays that they would get that picture of something bigger going on here. They'd be filled with the knowledge of his will. Not just knowledge of his will for their next step in life, how to make a decision, but this larger picture of what God is doing. That they would have this understanding of the knowledge of his will with all spiritual wisdom and understanding. In other words, you get it. I understand there's something else going on, something bigger going on here. Let me give you a picture to work with. Did you watch the Olympics? Everybody watch it? If you didn't, I don't know what else you were doing, but you know, the Olympics. This is a little side thing, it probably doesn't mean anything at all. But right before the Olympics started, our TV kind of went clunky. And so we went out and we got one of these bigger TVs. That's
like that.
Not quite, but pretty close. So now we were watching the Olympics. Okay. Which is fun. We're way into that. And part of anytime the Olympics comes up, I like to brag about the fact that I have a niece that is an Olympic champion. Okay. Now, if you didn't know that. My niece. Yeah. And she's in one of those events. It's actually considered the most difficult event in the entire Summer Olympics, but it's one that doesn't get a whole lot of press. It's not all that wonderful to watch. It was in two-person rowing. And in two consecutive Olympics, she won medals in this. And she is, right now she teaches other, or trains other Olympic champions. And so when you see that, most of those have been trained by her at some point along the way. Karen. And Karen... Karen's something. She's just this fun gal. But whenever, when you hug Karen, you know, it's like hugging a tree. You know, and there's no give. You know, it's just muscle. You know. And when she hugs you, you know you've been hugged. There was a little recovery time afterward. Like, oh, it's oh, okay. Got it. I've had a number of conversations over the years with Karen about that whole training process into the Olympics, which is it's a different layering of training than anything that we've ever experienced. And she talked about the idea that the coaches that they pair you with are ones that they're not concerned about your comfort. They're concerned about something bigger. That if you want to win this thing, here's what you have to do. And to work with athletes down to the most minute details of every single movement they make and how they take breaths and how they think. And I mean, everything is geared around this. And so they're there to give you the knowledge and the insight into what it will take and then to hold you to that so that you will become an Olympic champion. Well, part of this here, Paul's saying that you'll be filled with the wisdom and understanding here of how this works. Not as a bunch of great suggestions of how to kind of just have a more enjoyable life, but there's a bigger thing going on here. The thing that what Paul refers to as the goal and the prize that is out there. And here's the insight into how it works. And so much of that is cultivated in the midst of waiting. It's perspective of understanding what's going on, this bigger picture that changes how we go through things. I'll just pause for a moment and ask yourself, this one insight of this bigger picture, how would that change what you are wading through right now? Just kind of think about that for a moment. To realize there's something bigger going on, and the insight is here. I mean, this is the bigger picture that Paul prays that they would get. Second insight comes out of the next verse. Second insight into, the first one has to do with perspective, realizing there's something bigger going on. The second one has to do with purpose. Look at what he says here in verse 10. So that you may walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God. All coming down to this idea that the first one is, as you notice in that, has to do with his will rather than mine. Second one has to do with the idea that it's about him that we even walk through this life. It's not about me. This desire to please him in all respects. And where that shows up is in the midst of waiting. Man, it's a big thing to shape how we wait. Not only understand there's something bigger going on, but that how I do this, my desire is to please him in all respects, and to walk through this in a manner that will please him. Some years ago, I don't know, it was 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever years ago, I told you a story about a friend of mine up in Oregon. I'm going to tell it to you again, because some of you, I'm sure, have long since forgotten it. Others weren't here, so I'm going to bring it back again. But this guy's a hero of mine. For years, he cared for his wife, who had one of these debilitating diseases that was taking her life. And it went on for years and years. When it first started, and they first had it diagnosed, it was just simply one of these things that was an inconvenience. She would stumble once in a while. She would not have the motor skills that she would want to have, that kind of thing. But as it progressed, it began to take more and more of her life, to where she ended up having to have a walker and then a wheelchair, and then finally to a point where she couldn't get around at all and had to be at home and have someone care for her and ultimately do all the things for her, everything. And part of what makes this man such a hero to me, and there's a whole bunch of things, but it's how he dealt with his wife during this time. He just passionately loved this woman. And he's a pastor. And so he started to adjust his schedule. And the whole church is watching this thing. Talk about a stage. They're watching how their pastor's going to walk through this thing. But he would adjust his schedule and so he could spend more and more time at home and be in the center of this care for his wife. And as it got more intense, they developed a rhythm every morning. If you have tissue, you want to get it out now. but they had this rhythm every morning. And it was the same, and they knew it was going to go on. The words didn't change much on it. But it never got old to him. He said, never did it get old. One of the first things he would do in the mornings is he would get her full attention. Actually kind of like, so they were looking into each other's eyes. He'd say, you need to hear this again from me today. You'd actually hear the words that I love you. And that'd be enough. Right there is enough to kind of break you down on this thing. But then he would go on to the next part of it. I love you, and it will be my goal today to do something that makes your day. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the day is going to bring. I don't have a plan yet. Somehow, I'm going to do something that makes your day. Isn't that something? This guy's a rock star. I'll use that every once in a while at a retreat, and all the gals out there, they're crying, and all the guys are going, oh, shoot. And that bar is so high up there, man, I'm never going to make that one, And his wife, not too long ago, passed away. So that story has shifted. But ever since I first heard that, I've used that as kind of a marker point in my own walk with Christ. So when I'm on my game, which I'm not always on my game. You know how that goes. When I'm on my game, I start my morning the same way that he did with his wife. Only I do it with my Lord. And say, Jesus, as I'm looking into his eyes, Jesus, you need to hear this again from me. You need to hear me actually say this again. That I love you. And it will be my goal today to do something that I know pleases you. I don't know what it is, because I don't know how the day is going to unfold. I don't have a plan. But the gauge of success in this day is going to be whether I can end it saying that I've done something that I know pleases you. So that I can see your face, imagine your face looking at me and saying, yes, that's my guy. That's my son. Yes. That's my goal. I believe that's in the heart of what Paul's praying here. That not only would we have this bigger picture, so we have some way of orienting ourselves in life and understanding waiting, but also so that as we enter the day, it's not just about me. It's not about how things are going to work for me, and is it going to be more pleasant for me today, and will things kind of line up right, and we're crazy, but at least to get on with the show, you know? But rather, in the midst of all those, here's all these opportunities, and if I'm on, the realizing that the goal is to please Him and to walk through this in a day that I know I've done that. And it changes how you wait. Now think for a moment. The things you're waiting through, how would this change how you wait through those things? Circumstances or people? See where I'm going with it? One more. Comes on the other side of it. So it starts at the very last word of verse 11, moves into verse 12. It says, joyously giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. So there's not only perspective, there's purpose, but then there's also pleasure in this thing, anticipating God's faithfulness in it. Joyously giving thanks. Because in the midst of waiting, that's not our natural default mode, right? Just like this morning, I'm waiting for my default mode wasn't, well, hey, cool, take your time. It's more like you're imposing on me. When's this thing going to be over? Don't you get what's going on here? That's our default. But he says that I'm praying that you would have this mindset that anticipates God's faithfulness, that sees things the way they actually are in this, that you're joyously giving thanks for something that is true in the midst of something else that's true. And it's not just joyously giving thanks in general, but very specifically. Giving thanks to God who has qualified us to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. And it goes on then. For He delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of His beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. The idea is that I'm giving thanks that something so tremendous is true. In the midst of this, whatever waiting there is, whether it's in circumstances, around people, whatever, it pales by comparison. That's if I get it right. Not sure how many of you have read this book. Have you read 1,000 Gifts, Anne Voskamp? Anybody read that? Huh? Or you don't want to admit it? It's one of those books, I think it's a great book. You're either going to love it or hate it, one of the two. But Anne Voskamp, in the midst, the book is about this idea that here's a woman whose life has not worked out the way she thought it would. And she discovers as a believer that one of the most powerful keys was the issue of gratefulness. Not just generalized gratefulness, but being grateful to the God of her redemption and digging deep into that. And it's not, I'm grateful that I'm alive, that I have a home. I mean, those are all pieces of it. But being grateful for something much more profound than that. That God has found me, that I'm His, that I've been redeemed, and that I'm going to share in the inheritance with the saints here, and that I've been transferred out of the domain of darkness into His kingdom. That these bigger things, one of the driving statements she makes throughout that book, if you read it, you'll find this, the statement that we are wildly loved by God. And she enters the days with this as one of her echoes of thought. I am wildly loved by God. in the midst of life as it is. Imagine how that would change how you walk through whatever it is you're walking through, how you would wait through life as it presents itself. Waiting is an inescapable part of life. If you're hoping sometime it'll be over, it just is for all of us. But it's not only an inescapable part of life, it's an essential part of the spiritual life, of how God shapes us. And the art of it, part of what separates us from anyone else, those of us who have found redemption in Jesus, is that we have this power available to us to walk through. And we access that power through, I believe, the other keys in this prayer. Through being filled with the knowledge of His will, His perspective. Through setting out to please Him in the midst of every day and every circumstance in the midst of those days. And through joyously giving thanks to the Father. Not so much for the circumstance, but for who He is and what He has done for us. This incredible, joyful thanks for what He has done. So let me pray for you right now.